Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review was heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the war story when we come back. You know, in real estate transactions, we follow these three rules. It is location, location, location. Well, in criminal law, we follow three rules also when we're talking to the police or government agents, and that is, don't say anything, keep your mouth shut, and then shut up. Knowing what to say and when to say it, and what not to say and who not to say it to, is summed up in this maxim of law, and that is, all of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. And that's why judges, in their opinions, make these kinds of short, terse statements. Listen to this first judge. He said, "Who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights?" And he said that in U.S. versus Dickerson. Now, you know, if I said something like that, I'd be accused of being a tax protester. Now, listen to the second judge. He said, "You can and you must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment." And he said that in Belknap versus United States. You know, if I said something like that, I'd be accused of obstructing justice. Now listen to what this third judge has to say. He said, "The constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent as well as to protect the innocent and the farsighted." And he said that in Marchetti versus United States. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school, and it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's informative. Our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, is available on compact disc for adult home education. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org. All right, we're talking about war. War from the point of view of the Bible. The Bible is filled with war. In fact, it's mentioned 224 times in Scripture. My old granny used to say it was a bloody book. She called the Bible a bloody book. It's got its share of wars and blood, all right. There's no doubt about that. But there's a reason for that. And so we've been discussing this thing of war in our position as Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife here on planet Earth, and our relationship to this upcoming war. What are we going to do about it? Now, over in Afghanistan, there's a row going on over there concerning the killing of civilians. And it was a big deal over in Iraq. You know, we killed more than a million Iraqis during the course of that war, from 2003 to about the present time. More than a million Iraqis have been killed. Now, that's about 1/26 of their population. Now, it's lamentable that people get killed, but, you know, by comparison, World War II killed 50 million people, World War I killed 25 million people, and the bubonic plague killed 100 million people. I think old Joe Stalin summed it up with a flair. He said, when he was talking about war and this thing of the number of people that get killed or about death in general, he said, "When one man dies, It is a tragedy. When a million people die, it is a statistic. A statistic. So when we're talking about a million people dying, you know, that's just a number. But nearly every night on the Lehrer News Hour, or at least once a week, they will tally up the number of people, and they'll show the pictures of the soldiers that are killed in the battle zone. And then you can see the tragedy of each one of these deaths, one at a time. But you know, when we're talking about war, it's not very much. It's nothing to brag about. In the Civil War, we were killing 1,000 men a day. 1,000 men a day. When we got over to Normandy, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 people a day died in the Normandy invasion. Three battles in World War I killed 40,000 people in a single day on our side, not to mention the German side. So there have been battles, boys and girls, that have tragedies multiplied by the thousands. War is a bad business. War isn't very, very good for you and me. And if there's any way that we can avoid this war, we ought to be getting after it. That's my take on it. But we're not going to get away with it. This war that's coming up is going to affect me just like you and everybody else. So what I want to do is to make this war affect me less than you, less than the guy that gets killed. There are always survivors that come out of it. So in World War II, the common sense thing to have done is to get out of London. Get out. You needed to get out of Berlin. When that war got underway, you need to leave the big population zones and population areas and get out into the countryside. It's less likely that you're going to get bombed out on a farm in Isabella, Missouri, than you are that you're the risk that you run that you'll get bombed in a city like Tulsa or Oklahoma City or New York, Los Angeles, or Philadelphia. Now, that being the case, and I think that's pretty logical, and everybody can see that, remember last time we were talking about a war coming up in Leviticus 26, verse 25. Let me read it to you again. This is where we broke off last time. Here's our Creator. This is the guy, this is the God of the Bible. This isn't the God you heard about last Sunday now. That's a different fellow. The gods that we're talking about here in the United States, like Florida and California and these nice gods, you know, like sweet Jesus away in the manger and so on, those are nice gods. They're not bringing war down on you and killing a bunch of people. But this God here in Leviticus 26, now this guy's meaner than a junkyard dog. Listen to what this guy said now. He says, I'm going to bring a sword upon you that shall avenge the quarrel of my covenant. And when you're gathered together within your cities, I will send the pestilence among you, and you shall be delivered into the hands of your enemies. Three things here in this one verse. He says, I've got a bitch with you, and I'm going to avenge the quarrel of my covenant. So there's a contract involved here. And yesterday I showed you that in verse 15, this is Leviticus 26, verse 15, he says, and if you shall despise my statutes, or if your soul abhors my judgment, so that you won't do all of my commandments, but that you break my covenant. Covenant, contract. Contract. You break my contract. And here's what I'm going to do to you. So I've got a quarrel, and I'm going to bring the sword. Sword, that's a buzzword for war. I'm going to bring a war upon you. And avenge the quarrel of my covenant, this breach of contract. And when you're gathered together in your cities, I'm going to send the pestilence. That's disease. I'm going to send disease upon you. And you shall be delivered into the hands of your enemy. You're going to have a war, your enemies are going to come upon you, and you're going to lose the war. Now, when I say that to people, especially students, eyeball to eyeball, their mouths drop open. They look at me in bewilderment, and they say, how can you, an American, say that America is going to be involved in a war and lose? It's very easy. I read it right there. See how simple that is? Now, let's be pragmatic about this. Let's suppose that you and I were sitting in our apartment in Berlin, Germany. And let's just pick a date, say August, September, October 1943. And I look over to you, and we're sipping a couple of margaritas, see, in my apartment. And we've just been talking politics and one thing and another. And we're both Germans, and we're both sincere Nazis, and we were just rooting for Germany. And we just desire to win this war. And I turn to you and I say, you know, Hans, if this war continues on like it has for the last 6 months, we are going to lose. What would you think of that? Now, the turning point historically in World War II was in March of 1943. The Germans and the Japanese, you know, they were just winning hands down until March of 43. Then things, the worm turned. And beginning in March of 1943, things started turning against the Axis powers. And then as the months wore on, you know, it was pretty obvious that if the war continues on like this, the Axis powers are going to lose. So, you know, there comes a point in time like February 1945. There wasn't any doubt in anybody's mind that if this war continues on like it is, that the Allied powers are going to win. All right, so ultimately the war ends, and sure enough, Germany lost the war. Now, boys and girls, just looking at the United States of America, looking at the world today from where we're sitting, if this continues on like it is and like it has been over the last 30 years, the United States of America and the Western civilization is going to be destroyed and swallowed up by our enemies, the Russians and the Chinese. Now, the Chinese were a third world backward country until Richard Nixon went over there and made a deal with them, and we here in the West have built China, our enemies. Remember what God told us over here? He said, you will sow your seed in vain and your enemy shall eat it. And that was in verse 16. We have transferred our technology, our food and food production, our steel mills and our factories to China, for crying out loud. Now, why any sane, rational person would do that? Turn over your factories. Let me give you a number here. Going back to 1960, got that down? Write it. 63% of our gross domestic product, the GDP, in 1960 was manufacturing. Manufacturing. Today, it's 8%. Today, the manufacturing capacity of the United States of America is the same as it was in 1865. You know, the Stanley Company, the tool company, remember Stanley? They have left the United States. Their factories, their tools, their equipment, their buildings are sitting in foreign countries. Now wake up and smell the coffee. If this trend continues on like it has over the last 30 years, we lose. Then we got something worse. We've got our God over here telling us in Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28, and several other chapters. Now he says, I've got a bitch with you people over there because you breached my contract. I'm going to destroy you for this. So I just come along here as a reporter and I'm saying, hey, you want to know who's going to win World War III? Russians and Chinese. Hey, you want to know why? Because you and I breached our contract with our Creator. You know who's going to do this to us? It's our God. He's doing it to us. And who's he using? The Chinese and the Russians. And we're doing it to ourselves. Well, we got a lot going against us, too. You know, we've got a bunch of politicians over here that have sold out, and they're working for the other side. And then we got all these multinational corporations over here, and they're working for the other side. They're working for their own self-interest. Now, if there's anybody here in America, as I speak, that believes that Bank of America, Citicorp, and Goldman Sachs, and the President and the Congress are working in your best interest or on your behalf, you're so far out of touch with reality, there's no hope for you. You should turn this program off and go turn on some acid rock or something and entertain yourself. But the moral to the story here is that there's a cause and effect relationship coming down upon us. Now, there's something that you and I can do to alleviate our problem. If the problem is a breach of contract, then why don't we go back and cure the breach of contract? Let's try it this way. Let's suppose that you're making payments on your house and you're three payments behind. Bank sends you a notice and says, hey, listen, we're going to foreclose on your house unless you catch this back up. And you're sitting there cussing out the bank because they're a bunch of dirty, low-down, no-good capitalist SOBs, and you're just really feeling real bad about this. And I come along and I say, have you ever thought about curing this deficiency in your agreement? Why don't you walk into the bank and tell them, look, here's what the problem is, and here's how I propose to cure this breach of contract. Instead of going in there and arguing about what a good guy I am and how I've made all these payments all these years, why don't you walk in and say, you know, you guys are right. I'm in breach of contract. I haven't made my payment. And the reason is, and here's what I propose to do about that. And see if you can work out something with them. Now, God's a pretty nice guy. This guy isn't too shabby when you get down to the nitty-gritty. He wants you to perform on the contract, and if at any time, he tells you this plainly, he says, if at any time you people will repent and turn from your wicked ways, then I will not do this to you. If we will cure this breach of contract. So my conclusion is, and years ago when I looked at this, I said, you know, it's about time for me to get off the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. I need to go back to the 10 Commandments. Let's give it a try and see what happens. Works like a shot. Now I'm sitting here practicing this law and I'm saying, well, I don't know that he's going to save me out of this, but I have every reason to believe that he will, and I think that he should. I think he should. I'm a mile ahead of the Pope. I'm way ahead of the Mormons and everybody else that don't practice the Passover and the Sabbath and keep the statutes, judgments, and commandments. It doesn't guarantee me. I'm not suggesting, you know, that I'm saved and I've got it knocked. I'm not bulletproof. And he may just take a look at me and say, you know, I think I'll just tune you up while I'm at it, Gordon. I've got a couple other bitches with you. And I could get my comeuppance along with everybody else. But if you want to give it a good shot, you know, have I got a chance to avoid this? The solution to the problem is to obey God and keep his commandments. Now, let me show you why I'm pretty cocky about that. Over here in Revelation, remember we talked about Revelation? Gene called last week, you know, and he said, hey, how come you don't talk about that? So I said, okay, let's talk about it. So last week I covered the book of Revelation. I showed you all these codes that are in here, and you have to code plead this thing out. Well, this thing of war appears here in Revelation 8 times. Well, over here in Revelation, and we'll flip over here to chapter 19. You might want to write this down, Revelation 19, 11, and 19. Listen to what he says here. He says, and I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat upon him was called Faithful and True, and in righteousness he does judge and make war. Did you get that? It says he's faithful and true, and in righteousness he makes war. This is a righteous war that this guy's going to conduct against us. He's not taking advantage of us in the slightest. He's given us every opportunity now here in the United States, you know. And that last time I saw an opportunity for us to make a change, the president went to the Congress and said, what we need to do is to legalize gays in the military. And there's been this sea change of public opinion change over the last 15 years, they tell me here on the news. And, you know, I'm not here to tell you people how to conduct your wars and your foreign affairs and your military operations or your political ideologies over here, but I wanted to point out to you that this sodomy and lesbian thing, you know, that this same-sex marriage thing, this God of the Bible calls that an abomination. He says that he don't like that at all. And that's a part of the contract. You know, a part of the contract is that we would not become sexual deviants and practice sexual deviant practices. Now, I know you didn't make that agreement, but your great-great-great-granddaddy did. It's an adhesion contract, and as a part of the contract, you're prohibited from doing that. Now, I'm fully aware. I'm not totally naive now. I understand fully that you people have rejected this, and you have taken on your own government, and now you've rejected the laws of the Scripture, and you're going to make your own laws, and Nancy Pelosi and Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein and all the good senators and representatives now are going to trump God and make your own laws and do your own thing. Okay. Hey, listen, don't let me get in the way now of your happiness and success. But in the last place where we find the word war located, it's in Revelation 19:19. And listen to this. You know, he says, and I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him that sat on the horse and against his army. And the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that wrought miracles before him, with which he deceived them that had received the mark of the beast and them that worshipped his image. And these both were cast alive into the lake of fire, also known as Gehenna, or hell, burning with brimstone. And the remnant were slain with the sword of him that sat upon the horse, which sword proceeded out of his mouth, and all the fowls were filled with their flesh. Now this guy says he's going to make war. He's going to make war in righteousness. He's going to make war against us. And when it's all said and done, we're going to end up in the lake of fire if we don't shape up and start practicing these Ten Commandments. So I just thought I'd throw that out there for your consideration. Billy Graham, I haven't heard him talking much about this. And Gene called and he said, hey, why don't you talk more about it? And I said, well, okay, I'll pick that up. We'll do that. Now, the book of Revelation is a book of war. It's mentioned in there 8 times, and the story flow, as you read through there, people are getting killed right and left. In Leviticus 26, now, there's the penal clause to the contract. Let's take a look here at verse 26, and listen to this. He says, and when I have broken the staff of your bread, 10 women shall bake your bread in one oven, and they shall deliver you your bread again by weight. And you shall eat and not be satisfied. Now that scripture is talking about famine. It's talking about, you know, the staff of your bread. It's kind of written in code. And I code-pletted out. So let me just read it to you in plain English. Here's what it says in modern up-to-date English. It says, and when I have broken the staff of your bread, 10 women... shall bake your bread in 1 block-long ITT Wonder Bread oven. And they shall deliver you your bread, that wallpaper paste, again by weight in 1-pound loaves. And you shall eat that wallpaper paste, and you will not be satisfied because there is no nutritional value in it. Now let's take a look at our population here in the United States. We got 27% of us are obese. We're eating a lot of fat, 30% in our McDonald's burgers. We eat a lot of French fries, and we eat a lot of, drink a lot of soda pop that's got 9 teaspoons of sugar in it. We eat white bread over here, fortified with worthless vitamins. And we feed all of the nutritional value to our livestock. And then we wonder why we have diabetes, heart attack, and cancer. Now notice he said, I'm going to send a pestilence against you. Boys and girls, we are already suffering from this pestilence. We're already suffering from diabetes, cancer, heart disease, and a whole host and plethora of diseases that 50 years ago we didn't even have names for, you know, like muscular dystrophy and microphalgia or something, and Parkinson's disease and AIDS. Hell, I never heard those names when I was a kid. which is precisely what we see. I'm going to send diseases upon you that you've never heard of before. Remember that prophecy? Hell, that's already happened. It's right in our face. Then in verse 27, he goes on, he says, "And if you will not for all of this hearken unto me, but you walk contrary unto me, then I'm going to walk contrary unto you also in fury, and I will chastise you seven times more for your sin." So first of all, he starts out, remember, I'm going to break the pride of your power. Well, World War II was the end of our power. And from that point on, boys and girls, you know, we Americans, we haven't won a single war. We're just out here fighting and stirring up a lot of dust and hate and discontent, but we're not winning our wars. So he's broken the pride of our power. He says, "I'm going to send the pestilence among you, diseases you never heard before." And now we got Parkinson's disease and AIDS and all these various diseases over here plaguing us. And we haven't repented. This nation, you know, the United States of America, and I don't think you Canadians have, you know, walked down and said, "Hey, listen, I think I need to make some changes here," or Australia or Western Europe. So as a result of that now, he keeps telling us, "Now I'm going to lean on you a little bit more, I'm going to lean on you a little bit more." Now there comes a point in time here when there's no more leaning on us. I had a daddy that was like that. You know, he'd tell me, you know, to do this or do that. And then, of course, you know, when you're 12 years old, you're always smarter than the old man. So I didn't do it, and I didn't do it. And so then I get warnings. You know, "You better do this or else I'm going to do that." And I go, "Nah, nah, 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 nah," you know. Yeah, talk. So, and then after the warnings were over, you know, then there were stern warnings. And then after you haven't listened, and after you haven't performed, and then after, you know, you've gotten away with this for a while, then when the stern warnings come, you know, you get kind of cocky. And then there comes a point in time when there's no salvation left. The old man stands up, he whips off his belt. Now you can see that there's seriousness here. And you say, "Okay, I'm going to go make my bed. I'm going to go out and mow the grass." And the old man says, yeah, you're going to do all of that, but we're going to do a little more than that." And then he grabbed me and he just whipped the daylights out of me. Now, what in the hell did all this gain me? You know what I mean? In the end, when it was all said and done, I was going to mow the grass, make the bed, and take out the garbage. In the end, that's the way the game was going to be played. And all of my gamesmanship and all of the dinking around and getting uppity and lippy, you know, with the old man, all that got me was a lot of pain, anguish, sorrow, discontent. And I would submit to you, I think that's where we're headed here. I don't think that all of this giving God the finger and dinking around over here is ultimately going to get us very far. I think in the end over here, we're going to sit down, shut up, and do what we're told. The question, I guess, arises, are you going to do it voluntarily, or are you going to do it after the old man gets through with you? So again, you know, that's a choice that you have to make. My choice is, I think I'll shape up early on here. Let me see if I can avoid a lot of this hate and discontent, a lot of this pain, suffering, and anguish. All right, so after he tells us now for about the umpteenth time here, let's see how many he says, seven times. This is the fourth time he's used this term seven times in here. Four times now he's done that. In verse 29 he says, "And you shall eat the flesh of your sons, and the flesh of your daughters shall you eat." Just one verse here in Leviticus 26. Now, over in Deuteronomy 28, he went into a lot of detail. Did you notice that? He went into quite a bit of detail. That was in Deuteronomy 28, about verse 54, 53, through about 58, something like that. But here again, he's made that same reference again. He says, you're going to end up eating your own sons and daughters. Now, cannibalism isn't common to start with. And eating your own kin is even less common. And he says here, you're going to end up eating your own sons and daughters. That's how bad this thing's going to get. Verse 30 says, I'll destroy your high places and cut down your images and cast your carcasses upon the carcasses of your idols, and my soul shall abhor you. So he's going to knock down our churches, our capital buildings, and our idols. You know, these idols over here, this is the God of Florida. We practice the laws of the God of Florida, but we won't practice the law of God. And he says, I'm going to knock all that down, and I'm going to cast your carcasses on the ruins of it. Carcass, that's dead body. That's what a carcass is. It's a dead, inanimate body. And then I'll make your cities waste, and I'm going to bring your sanctuaries unto desolation, and I will not smell the savor of your sweet odors. These sanctuaries over here are churches. It says I'm going to bring those to desolation. I'm going to make your cities waste. That's going to come by war. War, remember, from our enemies. Now, these enemies are armed with nuclear weapons. Are you aware that the Chinese and Russians, now they both have nuclear weapons? You can just about bet that in World War III there's going to be nuclear bomb war. And it's Ezekiel 5 or 6, I believe it is, that guarantees it. He says, I'm going to lay your cities waste. Now, not until World War II did we see the capacity of warring armies to lay each other's cities waste. Now we can. We've done it before. Now, for us to sit here and say, well, it ain't going to happen in the United States. That isn't going to happen to Brisbane or Canberra, Australia. That'll never happen up here in Toronto or Vancouver, Canada. Well, I wouldn't bet on it. I wouldn't bet on it. If you want to live in Vancouver or Toronto, you know, get after it. But I think you'd be better off if you were outside the city limits someplace. I don't know where the bombs are going to drop, but I'm betting that they're not going to drop very many of them on 240 acres in Isabella, Missouri. Or up someplace in North Dakota. They're out in the heartland of Saskatchewan or Alberta. I was talking to a guy the other day. He lives way up in the north end of Alberta. I think he said 30 miles from the Northwest Territories. Now, that's about as far north as you can get, you know. And this guy's living up there. I said, you know, I think you're in about the right location. Guy's name's Tom. I said, Tom, I think you're in the right place. Not very likely, unless the Russians are aiming at Toronto and the rocket falls short and drops on your farm, are you going to have much of a problem? He's asking me, you know, if I thought that was a good place. I said, geez, save me a spot. I'd like to go up there with you. Hey, I'm here at the halfway point, and I got to give you a reminder here before the governments get after us prematurely. And remind you here that you have been listening, or you are listening right now, to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. And we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not state schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Click on to the email and, click on to the archives page. Click on to archives, and you can download that free general law CD package right there off of our website. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we're giving, we don't do that because the people that we're recommending and endorsing are going to endorse us. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be, they don't have to be, but they may be hostile. It can be political. Sometimes they're religious or economic or sectarian or racial or ethnic partisans. And their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about war. We're talking about the war story. Here in the Bible, there's a lot to be said about war. It's mentioned in Scripture 224 times. And here in the book of Leviticus, chapter 26, one of the penal clause chapters in Scripture, he talks about war, national captivity. He talks about punishing us. And so, you know, a lot of times people, they say, why would God do that to his chosen people, we the people of the United States? Well, the reason that he's going to do that to us is because we had a contract. We had an obligation. We had an agreement. And then we didn't keep up our end of the agreement. Now, a lot of times people say to me, well, what is it in this agreement that we haven't kept up? I get asked that quite often. So let me take a look here and see if I can identify that for you. I showed you this a couple of days ago, but let me review that again while we're on the subject matter over here. Let's take a look at things like Christmas, pork, Easter, unjust weights and balances, witchcraft, sodomy, abortion, adultery, usury, and voting. You know, just to name a handful here. Christmas is a prohibited activity. I know that Christians practice Christmas and they love it and they think it's the greatest thing since sliced white bread, and after all, we want to honor Jesus on his birthday. But that's a pagan practice. It's a pagan festival. And he told us not to do that. And he told us in Jeremiah 10, verses 1 through 6. And remember, Jesus said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. And Jeremiah 10, 1 through 6 are some of the words that proceeded out of the mouth of God. And he said, don't do that. And we do that every year. We have a national Christmas tree. And we have this national Christmas. Now, we hate God. We've banned the Bible from public school. And we've banned religion from our colleges and universities. God help any public official who brings a Bible into any public building in the United States of America, especially a school building. And yet, we're religious people and we practice Christmas. We do it with the blessing of our Congress and the President and the National Christmas Tree, all sponsored by the taxpayer, to practice something that we're told in the Bible not to do. Pork. We're told not to eat pig. Government licenses meatpacking plants and farmers and everybody else out here to raise pigs, put them on the market, and we're supposed to eat them. Easter. We're told not to practice Easter. It's a pagan practice in Jeremiah 44, verses 17 through 19, and we're practicing Easter. We're told not to practice witchcraft. Hell, in this country, we have made it equal to Christianity. We've made it equal. It's a religion. We protect witchcraft under the First Amendment. Sodomy, strictly prohibited, Leviticus 20, verse 13, just one scripture out of many. Witchcraft, prohibited in Leviticus 20, verse 27. Unjust weights and balances. We've got this Federal Reserve. We've got this We've got this paper money, fiat paper money thing going on here, robbing everybody. It's prohibited in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. That's just one spot. It's prohibited in other places also, but just for the sake of my narrative here, I just want to give you at least one site and tell you that that's where it's against the law. Usury. Exodus 22, verses 25 through 27. Adultery. Exodus 20, verse 14. Voting. Exodus 20, verse 3. Eating fat. 30% fat in your McDonald's burger. Leviticus 3:17. That's just, I'm just scratching the surface. We got 82 of those. Out of 133 laws, 133 subject matters of law, we practice about, I don't know, let's just test it out here. We got 82 that we violate divided by 133. That's 61%. We are in violation of 61% of the law. And 39% of the law, we are either practicing or we're in violation of it at some lesser degree. Now, it's true, we Americans do practice some of the law of God. We're still practicing some of it. For instance, in our meat packing plants, we still bleed our animals. Down in Mexico, they strangle them so they can save that 70 pounds of blood in a carcass and then sell it to people. Here in the United States, we bleed those animals. So we're still in compliance with that statute. And then, of course, they bleed them and then they turn them into blood sausage and sell them to people. And those people eat that blood sausage and think it's good stuff. Then they're in violation of the law again. But here again, here's our problem. My take on it is that if we could get up around 90% compliance, we probably would be in Fat City. But boys and girls, we're down around 39% compliance nationally. And I don't think that that 39% is going to carry the day. In fact, based upon what I'm showing you here, I think that this is going to be the death knell of the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Western Europe. Now, you take it any way you want it. He goes on in verse 30, he says, "And I will bring the land into desolation, and your enemies which dwell therein shall be astonished at it." Our enemies that dwell therein, all of these foreigners and aliens and strangers that we've brought over here, these 7 million Muslims that we have brought over to the United States, And assimilated into our population, when they, along with all of the other millions of strangers that we've brought in over here, and by the way, we now have, I saw the number the other day, 68% white, and 32% all others. We are one-third strangers in our country, and by 2050, it's expected to be 50-50, half and half. Some states are already, Texas and California, have more strangers than they have Israelites. Can you believe that? Yeah. Now, in 1960, it was 90% white and 10% all others. And today, it's 68% white and 32% all others. Well, okay. You know, if you want to throw your country away and give it to the strangers, that's fine. But the stranger that lives within your gates is going to rise up high above you and bring you down very low. Now, evidently, that's what you want. Well, by God, you're going to get it. Now, you know, the cards have already been dealt. So there isn't going to be any more shuffling or cutting. The cards that you've got in your hand are the cards that you're going to play in this hand. You know, as they say down at the Blue Room, you know, if the cards are dealt, now play your hand. He goes on, he says, "I'm going to scatter you among the heathen, and I will draw out a sword after you. I'm going to draw out a war after you, and your land shall be desolate, and your cities made waste. Then shall the land enjoy your Sabbaths, as long as it lies desolate, and you be in your enemy's land. Even then shall the land rest and enjoy her Sabbaths. As long as it lies desolate, it shall rest, because it did not rest in your Sabbaths when you dwelt upon it. Now, the New World Order gang, they've got a plan. They're going to remove the entire population of North America and scatter us, the remnants of us, those that survive the war and the famine. And they're going to turn North America into a game preserve. Now, did you read this prophecy here? This is exactly what God says he's going to do. He's going to deport us. He's going to take the people living here in North America, and I suspect you Australians and New Zealanders, you know, are toast. I think you're leaving also. And you're going to end up in places like Libya, Ethiopia, Egypt, China, Russia. And more than likely, when the war is over and things are really bad, they'll come to you and say, listen, there's jobs over here in Ethiopia, Libya, and Egypt. Why don't you come down here, get on the boat, and take these jobs? I think you people will line up to get on the boat to get the hell out of here. That's how bad it's going to be where you live. It reminded me of the Hurricane Katrina story, and there was a young black woman, standing on a street corner in front of the door to a Greyhound bus. And this reporter came up, stuck a microphone in her face, and says, where are you going? And she looked at him. She was acting like she was kind of zombie-like. And she said, I don't know. And he said, you mean you're going to get on this bus, you don't even know where you're going? Where is your family? She said, I don't know. She didn't know where her family was. She did not know where this bus was going. She didn't know if she was going to Houston, Texas, which is where they said the bus was going, was to Houston, Texas. But she didn't know if it was going to Dallas or New York or Philadelphia or where. And she said, I don't know where it's going, and I don't care as long as it's away from here. That was Hurricane Katrina, the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. This is going to be worse than Hurricane Katrina. Much, much worse. In fact, remember, Jesus said that if he doesn't intervene, there isn't going to be any flesh saved alive on planet Earth. That's how bad this war is coming down. But, you know, there's early stages of the war, and as the war progresses, you're going to get to the point where as long as the land lies desolate, it shall rest, because it did not rest in your Sabbaths when you dwelled upon it. See, we haven't practiced land Sabbaths and jubilees here. And when I mention the word land Sabbaths and jubilees, you'll find that recorded in Leviticus 25. So if you'll turn over, in fact, it's just the next chapter back. The chapter before, chapter 26, deals with land Sabbaths and jubilees. And he said, here's what I want you to do. And we have never practiced land Sabbaths and jubilees in this country. We won't practice the weekly Sabbath. We won't practice the Passover. That's Jewish. We're not going to practice any of the holy days. And so our God comes along and says, okay, no problem. I got a quarrel, and I'm going to avenge the quarrel of my contract with this war. Now in verse 36, and he says, and upon them that are left alive of you, I will send a faintness into their hearts in the lands of their enemies, and the sound of a shaken leaf shall chase them, and they shall flee as fleeing from a sword, and they shall fall when none pursues. And they shall fall one upon another, as it were before a sword, when none pursues, and they shall have no power to stand before their enemies. Now, you know, today, you know, we take a lot of pride in our military, and we wave flags, and we think, hey, these guys are the champions, and they're heroes, and they're going to save us. Our God says these guys aren't going to save us in the final analysis. He says, I'm not going to be with you in your war. I'm going to change sides. I'm going to be working with the Chinese and the Russians against you. Why? Breach of contract. It's that simple. Go back to verse 15. Breach of contract. War, the sword. I'm going to go to war. Now, the good part of this is that we know what he's going to do. How do we know? He just told us. Go to Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. What is he going to do to you people that are living in Los Angeles, California, Tallahassee, Florida, and Burlington, Vermont? He's going to do to you just exactly what he told you he's going to do to you. This is the rules of engagement. Here's the way this deal comes down. Now, if you want to avoid this, well, then we got to go back and do something a little different, don't we? Now, the nation isn't going to change. I mean, you're not going to get Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid to make any meaningful changes here. Our joint chiefs of staff, they're not going to change the rules of engagement. They're not going to change the system of war that they teach to our young men in West Point and Annapolis. They're not going to go to the scripture and follow this. That's foolishness. I don't deny it. Well, okay. But then there's a result that comes out of it. A result. Now, we Israelites have suffered through this result. This is military defeat, national captivity, and deportation. We have suffered through this for more than 3,000 years, time after time after time. That's why the Bible is such a bloody book. It's a book about our history. It's a book about people just like us today who gave our Creator, our God, the finger and told him to kiss off. And he said, okay, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success here, Charlie, but watch this. One time, the whole damn world gave him the finger and said, we're not going to practice your law. And he killed everybody but eight. The Egyptian army got uppity with him. He killed all 450,000 of them in 20 minutes in the Gulf of Aqaba. I mean, this guy's been doing this for a long time. We've seen plagues out in the wilderness with Moses time after time after time after time. I mean, you'd think that people would wake up to this and shape up, but they don't. They haven't. They aren't now, and they're not going to. So sit back and relax and enjoy the ride. I'm not here trying to persuade anybody that I'm right and they're wrong. I just came here and said, hey, did you know that this was going on? Did anybody ever tell you this before? Did anybody ever say to you, hey, Houston, we got a problem? He goes on, he says a little bit more here. Verse 38, and he says, you shall perish among the heathen, and the land of your enemies shall eat you up. And they that are left of you shall pine away in their iniquity in their enemies' lands. And also in the iniquities of their fathers shall they pine away with them. Iniquity. Look it up. It just means lawlessness. In your criminal behavior. In your Christmas, Easter, and New Year's and eating pig. You know, in your iniquities. You'll pine away. Pine. That means that you'll just fade away. Now, in verse 40, he goes on, he says, now listen to this. He says, if they shall confess their iniquity, and the iniquity of their fathers, and their trespass which they have trespassed against me, and that they also have walked contrary to me, and that I also have walked contrary unto them, and have brought them into the land of their enemies, if then their uncircumcised hearts be humbled, and they then accept of the punishment of their iniquity. Then will I remember my covenant with Jacob, and also my covenant with Isaac, and also my covenant with Abraham, and I will remember. And I will remember the land. And the land also shall be left of them, and shall enjoy her Sabbaths, while she lieth desolate without them. And they shall accept of the punishment of their iniquity, because even because they despised my judgments, and because their soul abhorred my statutes. So when you're in national captivity, when all of this comes down upon us, he says, now wake up, smell the coffee, and remember this. I judged you in righteous judgment. You wouldn't repent. You wouldn't change, you wouldn't practice my law, you wouldn't fulfill the terms and conditions of the covenant. And for that reason, this is why you are in the dilemma, the straits, and the punishment that you find yourself. Now you know why this happened to you. So I read that and I said, okay, now I deserve this just like everybody else. I'm in hopes, though, that by straightening out my act, that maybe, you know, just maybe, I won't get whipped as hard as you're going to get whipped. My old dad used to do that. I had a little brother, you know, and he'd come down. He's going to dish out some punishment over here. And sometimes you'd get it, and then your brother would get it. But you wouldn't get it as hard because you were a little bit better than he was. You didn't get off scot-free, remember, but you didn't get it quite as bad. Well, that may be the case here. You know, if you can get off of this thing, you know, with half punishment, that'd be better than the full bore, you know. This is verse 43. The land also shall be left of them and shall enjoy her Sabbaths. You know, since we won't practice the Sabbaths here, he says, well, they're going to practice their Sabbaths. That's why I mentioned to you earlier. If the land is going to enjoy her Sabbaths anyway, why go through all of this agony and all this heartache and all this punishment? Because in the final analysis, when it's all said and done, we're going to do it anyway. It's just a matter of, are you going to take out the garbage, make the bed, and mow the grass of your own free will and volition because it's your duty? Or are you going to do it after you got marks all over your body and there's a lot of pain and suffering in the process? Because you're going to mow the grass, take out the garbage, and you're going to make your bed. Like it or lump it. You are going to practice this law. I know it's bad news, and I didn't want to be the guy that rained on your parade, but verse 44, he says, and yet for all of that, when they be in the land of their enemies, I will not cast them away, and neither will I abhor them, to destroy them totally, and to break my covenant with them, because I'm the eternal their God. But I will, for their sakes, remember the covenant of their ancestors, whom I brought forth out of the land of Egypt, in the sight of the heathen, that I might be their God, and I am the eternal. Now these are the statutes and the judgments and the laws which the Lord made between him and the children of Israel in Mount Sinai by the hand of Moses. Now we've got a contract. That contract has been breached. God did not breach his end of the contract, but we breached our end. This is the contract that was made in Mount Sinai. And in verse 15 he says, if you don't break my covenant and contract, I'm going to give you all these benefits, but if you break it, here's what I'm going to do to you. And that's what the bottom line is. So there's Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. Got those two down? Now couple those with Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. And then couple that with Revelation 6. Then move forward to Revelation 20, 21, and 22. And you couple those all together, and there they're code played out for you. Matthew 24 is an extrapolation of Revelation 6. Revelation 6 is an extrapolation of Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. And so if you want a cause and effect relationship, there it is, spelled out in spades. And then don't accuse me now of my interpretation, you know. The scripture is of no private interpretation. And that's why I had to take so much time, effort, and energy to show you, hey guys, we've got a contract. The contract's in breach, and there's a penal clause in the contract, and the contract is going to be fulfilled. And God says, I've got a quarrel, and the quarrel is going to be satisfied by war. And that is the war story. All right, I'm out of time. I got to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, more than 3,700, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, we're out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.